a terrific writer from Boston Sports Journal, author of the wonderful new book, The Franchise, A Curated History of the Sox. Sean McAdam joins us. Hi, Sean.
Guys, how are you?
Doing very well, thank you. How's your day so far?
Not too bad. No rain, which is good. We're against rain on home games and road games for that matter, so we're a step ahead of where we were last night.
So you've been doing a lot of personal appearances and book signings for the new book, so I'm glad to see that's going so well, as it should.
Yeah, it's been a nice experience, you know, meeting some people and interacting and doing some readings and signings at a number of kind of smaller independent bookstores in the Massachusetts area. People listening in your area, I don't have anything scheduled up in Maine yet, but I would remind people that you can find the book at a lot of those independent bookstores, as well as the bigger brick and mortar places, and of course online.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about your piece in Boston Sports Journal today. The opening line says it all. The concept of contention still floats over Fenway Park these days, but it's only an illusion.
Yeah, it you know, they keep saying that, well, we just have to get hot here, and you know, we have an opportunity to make up some ground against all these teams that are in front of us. We've got series with Toronto and Tampa Bay and Minnesota, and then Yankees coming up. But they leave out the important part, is that you've got to win those games to make up any ground. And that's something that they either haven't done at all or haven't done at a sufficient enough rate to make up any ground. You know, the last road trip, you would hope that they could go, you know, at minimum 4-2, maybe even 5-1 against Pittsburgh and Baltimore, and they had to settle for 3-3. Well, that's not getting them anywhere. Playing 500, you know, taking 2 out of 3 from a very bad Pittsburgh team, and then losing 2 out of 3 to a team that's in front of you, as the Orioles are, is not going to have you making any ground up. And so, you know, they're 4 games under .500. They're 7 games back, and really, they're in contention in name only because, you know, there are 38 games left to play, and they technically are still there. But I think we all know that this is kind of a fool's errand at this point.
And that makes some of the roster decisions even more curious. And you write about the one involving the top prospect that the team has, Tristan Casas, and their unwillingness apparently to even consider bringing him up when Eric Hosmer went down.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought that yesterday would be the perfect opportunity to take a look at him, both because of the need on the roster with Hosmer going on the IL with some back spasms, but also because starting yesterday, the Red Sox could have brought Casas up and not impacted his rookie status for 2023. And people ask, well, who cares about that? Well, people may recall that as part of the lockout and the subsequent collective bargaining agreement that was negotiated at the last minute, there were some provisions put in to help incentivize teams from keeping players down in the minor leagues so that they didn't have to worry about, you know, losing them to free agency a year early or having them eligible for arbitration a year early. And Major League Baseball essentially said, if you have a player on your roster on opening day who goes on to finish in the top three of Rookie of the Year balloting, then you get an extra draft pick. So that was supposed to motivate teams to put the best players on the field and stop worrying about service time. So the Red Sox could, in theory, have brought Casas up yesterday, starting yesterday, and given the number of games left, would do nothing to jeopardize his rookie status next year, so that if he made the team out of spring training, has a great year, finishes in the top three of Rookie of the Year award, then they would still qualify for that extra compensation pick. So, you know, that wasn't a factor, but apparently what was is that, you know, they still think that Casas could use some more time down there. They don't want to bring him up for a week and a half or a week or so. And then Hosmer's ready, and then you end up sending him back down. Whether we see Casas in September, I don't know. But it just seems like, you know, it might be time to drop the pretense and start looking forward to 2023 instead of hoping that Franchi Cordero is going to run into a few here in the next few weeks and make a difference in this playoff race. I think their needs and their aspirations are not quite lining up there.
Well, no, and tonight, in what would, if you believe they're still in it, would be a very big game tonight. And we've got Bobby Dalbec playing shortstop and Jeter Downs out there in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is roster space. Rich, you know, the reason that Dalbec is playing short is that Bogaerts is banged up with some back spasms. Pham is out of the lineup for the same reason, and so is Christian Arroyo, who kind of jammed his leg as he slid into first base the other day. So you've got three regulars out of the lineup, and that requires some moving around. And I get the, you know, if you're asking why isn't Jeter Downs here, it's because they don't think any of those three guys are going to be out for any period of time, and they just need a day or two before getting cleared to return. So I get that. But, yeah, it is a makeshift lineup that has Kike Hernandez at second, Dalbec at short, and, you know, basically no bench left because I don't think that either Pham or Bogaerts is available even to pinch hit. Maybe Arroyo could. So, you know, your extra player is basically your second catcher. And that doesn't leave you with a lot of flexibility.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. A lot of this, I think, goes back to before the season even began and a couple of deals that have not worked out very well. One that goes back even before last year, but clearly the Andrew Benintendi deal hasn't paid the dividends they hoped for.
Yeah, it hasn't. You know, I would remind people who are all of a sudden on the Andrew Benintendi bandwagon to take a look at, you know, the last 2 years he was here and recall that he was not exactly, a game changer for them. He made some adjustments to his swing, tried to hit for more power, that kind of backfired. And even now, both with the Royals and more recently with the Yankees, he's essentially turned into a singles hitter. You know, he's a decent outfielder. He gets on base a little bit, but, you know, I don't see him as a difference maker. And yet, what they've gotten out of Cordero, the occasional home run ball, you know, every once in a while he gets hot for a bit. You see flashes of his raw power and ability to hit the ball 450 feet. But the problem is that he doesn't do that nearly enough consistently. And he still is an adventure. At least at first base defensively. He's okay as an outfielder. You can live with him there, although they had to live with him in center last night for a few innings because of the injuries. And then Winkowski is showing himself, I think, to be, in a best-case scenario, a fifth guy back end of the rotation and more likely kind of a long reliever type. He just doesn't have the ability to get people to swing and miss. You get a lot of balls put in play against him, and invariably you have the kind of inning like he had last night in the third inning where he's got two outs and two strikes, and all of a sudden, you know, they've got eight runs and he doesn't finish the inning. So now I realize that there are some prospects in that deal that we won't know about for another couple of years, and maybe you know, either a pitcher or an outfielder that was part of that return package in 3 years is knocking on the door and making that deal look different. As it is, it doesn't seem to be adequate return, even if you accept the fact that Benintendi is only a slightly above average major leaguer at this point.
Maybe a worse move, given the lack of power we've seen this season, is dealing away Hunter Renfroe.
Yeah, you know, that was one that backfired. There's no getting away from that. And again, there's some prospects there, even if they've struggled, Benellis and Hamilton at Portland. Hamilton has got 51 stolen bases this year. And, you know, that's an intriguing tool, but you have to be able to do other things or else, you know, you're just kind of a poor man's Billy Hamilton. It's great to be the fastest guy on the field and one of the fastest guys in the game. But if you're not getting on base, it's hard to utilize that. We're seeing that in a certain degree with Jaron Duran, who's got great speed and is unquestionably the fastest guy on the Red Sox. But, you know, when your on-base percentage is about 270, how much good is that speed doing you? And Benellis is, you know, underachieved. And though he's shown flashes of power and got double figures in home runs, he's, you know, he's struggled to hit double-A pitching. Maybe he makes some adjustments and moves up the ladder and becomes more of a prospect. But that certainly didn't help them at the major league level with the production they got out of Bradley. And to date, it does not look like it's going to, you know, be salvaged by what they're getting out of the two minor leaguers in the deal. So, you know, and that has to be a concern dating back to the Mookie Betts trade. It's one thing to make deals and stockpile prospects and improve your minor league depth. Those things are important. We recognize the value of that. But if you're not identifying the right talent, then ultimately you're just going to end up with a lot of flotsam and jetsam in your system. You know, you look at the two guys from the Betts deal who have not really cracked the major league lineup yet. Both of them have been up briefly in Downs and Wong. And maybe Wong becomes at least a backup catcher next year, and there's some value to that. But, you know, Verdugo is a slightly above average outfielder, maybe only average outfielder. I don't think there's a lot of people expect Downs to be anywhere near an everyday player, and Wong probably has the ceiling of a number two catcher. That does not seem to be adequate return for a guy that is, when he's healthy, one of the half dozen best players in the game in Mookie Betts.
And so many needs for next season, and maybe more, depending on what happens on the left side of the infield. Any feeling which way that might go and when there might be some resolution?
Well, I've been on the train all year, Rich, suggesting that while I don't necessarily see a path to Bogart staying, I think they realize that they have to extend Devers, that you can't let a second homegrown 26-year-old player with MVP talent leave, either, you know, trade a year ahead of time or lose as a free agent. I think that they know that there would be, you know, pitchforks and everything else out on Jersey Street if they were to lose Betts, Bogarts, and Devers in the span of about two plus years. So I think they're going to find a way to keep Devers and get him extended this winter. I'm not nearly as optimistic about Bogarts. And that, you know, that opens up all kinds of other questions. Do you move Story over to shortstop?
Right.
Do you try to sign a slightly more affordable free agent shortstop like Dansby Swanson? Do you make a trade? Do you try to get a veteran guy to stopgap for a year or two and hope that Marcelo Meyer is ready maybe ahead of schedule? But you're right. There's a lot of uncertainty going forward. There's very few positions or areas. Ironically, as much trouble as the bullpen has given them throughout the year, they can go into next year, if everyone's healthy, feeling pretty good about what they have out there. If you think Houck and Whitlock are going to stay there with Schreiber, there's three back end of the bullpen guys that you can build around, but there's some openings in the rotation. There's a potential gaping hole at shortstop as soon as next year. And if not at short, then at second, if you move Story over. The outfield needs attention with Verdugo really the only guy that you have under control that you kind of pencil into the lineup for 2023. The good news is that there's going to be a lot of money to utilize,
right?
Because a lot of money's coming off the books between Eovaldi, Martinez, Vasquez is gone. And that's another area that they have to look at catching going forward. Right now, they don't have an obvious number one catcher under control for 2023 and beyond. So they do have some money coming off, but That gives them the freedom to go out and be pretty aggressive either on the free agent market or taking on some big deals and trades. But there's a lot of work to be done because right now, there's a lot of holes in this lineup and in this pitching staff.
Yeah, and a lot of potentially meaningless baseball to play between now and the end of the season unless they can do what they haven't been able to do consistently, and that's go out there and win 9 out of 10, 12 out of 14, something like that.
Yeah, they got to have one of those runs like they did in June, when they were 20-6, if they could, if you saw evidence that they had that in them, then, absolutely there's time with, the season ends 6 weeks from tonight. You've got, 39 or 38 games left. If you were to go, 24-14 or whatever down the stretch, you'd feel pretty good about their ability to leapfrog some of these other teams who are as mediocre as they are. But there's very little evidence to suggest that they have that in them, given the injuries and given how they've played over the last month and a half.
Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal. If you haven't picked up a copy yet of The Franchise, A Curated History of the Sox by Sean, make sure you do that. Always appreciate your time, Sean. Thanks again, and we'll talk with you soon.
My pleasure. Always good being on with you, Rich. Thanks.